Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is the 20th day of April, 2020. The reason I paused there, you know, these days seem to all run together. Yesterday, of course, was a day of Lexington and Concord. I was thinking perhaps today. Well, you know, anyway, nonetheless, the spirit of Lexington and Concord remains. And by that, I mean there is rebellion in the land. Have you noticed? You see, when Americans are lied to, and they're pushed around and they're shoved around under the pretext of whatever, we get a little bit hacked off. At least the patriotic Americans do, the ones that don't fall for everything, okay, that don't believe everything that the government tells you. And I got to tell you this. What we've learned over the last 72, 96 hours that was posited weeks ago, months ago, is coming true. All right. What has happened is we've been lied to about what this coronavirus is. We've been lied to about the numbers. We've been lied to about the people who are involved. We've been lied to about everything there is about this by the Fauci, Burks, Gates, alliance. And all of the outliers within that, or within that group of people, within that alliance, the pro, vaccine, but even worse than that, the pro ID 2020 Act, the pro, enslavement Act. It's interesting because President Trump is now on the position as he's saying, look, we need to open the country up for business. And he's been saying that, rolling out different plans. The governors, certain governors have said otherwise. As a matter of fact, Washington State Directorate, I like that word, Comrade Jay Inslee, back last week said the president is fomenting domestic rebellion. Now, it's interesting because this language has, with this very specific wording in that statement, and rebellion carries with it a very deep meaning to this nation, the nation of the United States, the nation of American citizens born into the idea of individual rights, liberty, and freedom. You can check out Conservative Shias from a couple of days ago. I think it was on the 17th, 3 days ago on the 17th, talking about that. But we are finding now that there are rallies taking place across the United States. And have you seen these? And the deep state tyranny, whether it's on a globalist level. Now what is happening is on a global level, but, even more insidious, I believe, is the lower level tyrannical decisions made by, whether it be at the level of governor, but even more insidious, perhaps at the county level, including but not limited to county sheriffs. And then county executives or mayors, that type of thing. We saw, as a matter of fact, there was a newspaper report, I think it was yesterday, in where was it? Was it San Diego or San Jose? One of the Sands in California. If you want to take a look at your screen, the police were giving out tickets, more than tickets, summons, citations, misdemeanor violations for people watching the sunset in closed vehicles. 22, I believe. 22 citations or 22 tickets, mandating appearances, again, for misdemeanor crimes, not summary offenses. This is not on par with a parking ticket. This is on par with a lower misdemeanor offense. I'm not sure of the grading in California, but you're looking at potential jail time as well as a $1,000 fine.
I'm trying to bring that up. It's
that's all right.
Just buffering.
You know what? That's all right. You get the idea. You don't need to see a picture of a police officer standing and writing a ticket. But this is what we're up against. And I do believe that that's a violation of our constitutional rights. Now, look. In fact, I'm going to bring John Moore on right now because I want to get his take on a couple of different items here. But right now, as we're seeing, we're seeing a lot of pushback. We're seeing, of course, this what appears to be an Asian American nurse standing on the street with his arms folded. And I'm not sure where this exactly was. You can find it on the headlines. It doesn't matter where it was. It was in the United States. And the media is portraying this as like a Tiananmen Square, where you remember Tiananmen Square, that one lone individual standing, stopping a Chinese Communist Party tank. Okay. The comparison is bogus. It is BS. And it is absolutely it's wrong. I don't give a damn if he's a doctor, a nurse, a priest, a bishop, you know, a high commander. I don't care. The fact is, our rights are being violated under the pretext of this pandemic, plandemic, whatever you want to call it. I don't deny that there's a virus. I don't deny that there's something going on here. But what I do have a problem with is the exploitation specifically of the issue, of the problem, the response, the tyrannical responses by the members of the deep state and the deep state wannabes. Understand, some of these people are just intoxicated with their power, this newfound power where I can stop, I can close businesses. Well, I'll tell you what, at some point, everyone is going to have to get together. And, maybe we need Coach Dave Dobmeier to lead the, not only the huddle, but to lead the offense on this. Open up the businesses. All of them. Don't tell me I'm non-essential. And Alex Jones did yesterday a reference to the Twilight Zone episode. The obsolete man. I don't know how many people saw that. I had referenced that many times on this program. That specific episode of the Twilight Zone, the obsolete man. I think it was Burgess Meredith that played Mr. Wordsworth, I think his name was. He was a librarian and become obsolete. And when he couldn't define when the powers, the globalist powers decided that he was obsolete, well, he was scheduled for termination. And I won't spoil the episode for you. It's good. Take a look at it. Again, it's the Twilight Zone, and the title is The Obsolete Man. So let's go to John Moore, and I want to get his take on a couple of other items that I did have isolated, a couple of videos, short videos, just
before
to get
before you do rolling. That, I want to say that there's not many things that are more essential than your job.
Exactly. Thank you.
We can do the distancing thing and.
Right.
I don't know.
What do you think? I mean, you've been scouting things out. Eric the Tech. By the way, Eric the Tech, I want to thank him. And we had a great Patreon, session yesterday for the, individuals who are assisting Steve, and I, Steve Quayle and myself. And we were going to meet at Branson, this specific group. And I want to thank everyone who participated. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Steve. And I want to just, you know, I appreciate you. And I appreciate Eric for his, he worked quite a long time yesterday and the day before. So thank you, Eric. But so Eric, you've been around. Have we had enough of this crap? I mean, we need to get back to work, right?
Absolutely.
Today or yesterday was the first day, and I didn't get a chance to ask you today. Have you gone to the store since this mandated mask implementation has been put into effect?
No, I'm actually going tomorrow to get some groceries, so we'll see how that goes.
I'm going to tell you, I am not a look. I think there's 56 cases in our county. Okay, fine. But when you start getting into, and I want to, again, I want to get John's take on a couple of these videos here. When you start getting into the explanations by these physicians who hold specific certifications, and they're saying, wait a minute, none of this makes any sense. And they start making connections. And again, they're a lot more intelligent. They've got the backgrounds than most people, and they start making connections with this specific, we'll call it a virus, and the symptoms which reflect the oxygen deprivation, kind of almost like a altitude sickness in some cases, or in cases where the hemoglobin can't transfer the oxygen to the, or where it needs to be, then there's something not right with what we're being told. And then when you've got American money, you've got Gates money funding the World Health Organization, number two funding the World Health Organization, and then you've got American money funding the research for gain-of-function studies at Wuhan. And the fact checker you're going to hear for the social media array, the head of that Wuhan project, saying this is all fake news. Folks, look, this is so transparent, and you know, and here's the thing. They're laughing at all of us. They're laughing at you. They're laughing at me because basically we're taking it. Okay. You want me to stay home from work? I'm a non-essential. Who in the hell determines who's essential and who's not essential in terms of working? And what gives you the right to tell me that my business is non-essential, that my position is non-essential? I don't see. Hey, did you ever hear any? Have you heard about the United States Constitution? You show me where in the Constitution that gives you the right. What gives you the right to do what you are doing? It's not there, obviously. John, how are you? John, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. John joins me every Monday. How you doing, John?
Really good. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. You're looking spiffy.
Well, I got a new computer here. It's a tower rather than a laptop. I think we got enough computing power to do video. Well, let's begin from the beginning, Doug. Western civilization, in fact, the entire planet has been dealing with epidemics for centuries. And we learned several hundred years ago that to deal successfully with an epidemic, you quarantine the sick people. You don't quarantine the healthy people. You quarantine the sick people.
Right.
That's what works. That's where we have centuries, literally centuries, of successful dealing with pandemics. And now we have a worldwide quarantine of the healthy people. This is insane. It's absolutely insane. Now, on top of that, the mass media, who's been lying to us for years, and the last 3.5 years with President Trump, we've learned how to, Fox News especially, exposing these lies. Well, the lies continue. There is a financial incentive to overreport who's got the COVID-19 and who's dying from it. As Rush Limbaugh said more than 20 years ago, any human activity you financially reward, you get more of it. Any human activity you financially punish, you get less of it. So if you get a financial reward for reporting people die from COVID-19, guess what? You're going to get more reporting. Now, for clarification purposes, there is such a thing as COVID-19, and yes, it is in fact killing people. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
So just to let people know that I'm not a denier that this is taking place. Of course it's taking place on one hand. On the other, I wrote a short article. I need to get this on my website. Doug, if it was 70 years ago, most American adults would be height, weight proportionate, and a tiny percentage taking a pharmaceutical product on a daily basis. These people, who are height, weight proportionate, and do not consume any pharmaceutical product, when they get this COVID-19, they're sick for a day or two or three, and then they're okay. However, it's not 70 years ago. We have about 3 out of 4 Americans who are overweight, obese, and take one or more pharmaceutical products a day. When these people get the COVID-19, they get really, really sick, and many of them die. Unfortunately, that's what's going on.
Right.
So,
I mean, that's half of what's going on. I mean, I get right. that. We are a soft society by, this is, to me, is by design. You know, look, when you and I were in school, we had a robust physical education, requirements, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You
know,
get your fat butt out there and run a mile on whatever it was and on the track or do whatever. So yeah, plus back then we didn't have the, garbage foods that we have now. And when I say that, I'm talking about the, stuff that they
processed
inject, you know,
and yeah. genetically modified yeah, foods and exactly. all the rest of it. It all fits together. Now we don't know what you and I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. The Department of Justice, I hope is looking into, the origins of this biological weapon. It is a biological weapon. And my friend, Professor McKenna, he wrote a 2-page document giving his opinion on what's going on. Professor McKenna believes that when they released this virus, that they thought it would kill millions and millions of people worldwide. Well, it hasn't done that. It didn't quite get the effect that they wanted. So they're taking a few fatalities, relatively few, it's a tiny percentage, and making it appear to be worse than what it is, to get the response they're looking for. And I was just talking to a friend this morning about this, Doug. 8 weeks ago, we had the lowest rate of unemployment since they've kept records. Now, here we are 6 or 8 weeks later with the highest unemployment since we've kept records. What a dramatic change. And it's people have been saying, you can't turn this economy off like a light switch and turn it back on like a light switch. Obviously, you can shut it down like a light switch, which is what happened. It's pretty amazing. And your reference to the Twilight Zone, I think, is very applicable because I've been telling people for 2 weeks now, Doug, I feel like I'm living in a cheap science fiction film. This is so strange and so bizarre. We have the World Health Organization just, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago said, don't bother wearing masks. It doesn't do any good. Not that I trust much that they say. We have highly qualified healthcare professionals giving directly opposite viewpoints on what should be done. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Social distancing, don't social distance. It's really quite confusing, isn't it, Doug?
Well, it's, yeah, and I think it's designed that way to be confusing. You keep the, one of the things too, cover up a lie, throw in some confusion, and often lies, contribute to confusion as well. But, you know, look, we're being lied to, and the confusion I think is deliberate.
Well, it is deliberate. It is deliberate. Now, something we do, I call it opposition research. And I listen to National Public Radio, or what I also call National Socialist Radio, as opposition research. And one of the well-known commentators was interviewing somebody about what was going on involving the president and his discourse involving these states reopening. And the NPR commentator was trying to get, in our business we call it asking a leading question, asking if the president of the United States was advocating armed insurrection. And thank goodness that the person being interviewed responded in the negative, that the president was not advocating armed revolution. But the media is trying to hype this up and give people the appearance and the feeling that the president of the United States is advocating armed insurrection in the states that could open up their businesses and have not opened their businesses. That's just one example, Doug, of what's going on nationwide with the mass media, the mainstream media, attempting to make things worse than what they really are.
Well, yeah, and I at the opening I was talking about Governor Inslee from Washington State saying that the president is fomenting domestic rebellion. And there's an article in Conservative Treehouse from last week saying, you know, words have specific meaning. And when you start talking fomenting domestic rebellion, it does carry a much deeper meaning, especially to a nation like America and American citizens born into the idea of individual rights, liberty, and freedom. So, you know, these, the divide that is taking place, and it's interesting as well. The media is playing a specific role. These blue state governors are playing a specific role. These suddenly empowered blue state, or shall I just say communist, mayors, county executives, county councils, or the majority thereof. They're all, I mean, they are full bore tyranny. And it's amazing to me. You know, in the 60s, it was the left that were saying, hey, you know, just leave us alone. Let us live. Peace, love, rock and roll, whatever. Now, you know, going against the man, the fascist. If you watch old, like Dragnet and stuff like that, you can see the hippies, the left, engaging in that, you know, calling the,
I think that far back they called them beatniks.
Beatniks, yeah. But what,
you're dating yourself here.
Yeah, but the whole script has been flipped. I mean, it seems as if the left now is enjoying this newfound power they've got. And man, are they using it. And you know what? We've got to push back. And if we don't push back, it's their own damn fault because we're accepting enslavement when we needn't have to. You know what? No, you're not going to close my business. You're not going to close my 80% of the restaurants, according to a study just out this past weekend, are not going to reopen. And I'm talking about the mom and pop restaurants. 80 flipping percent businesses in the restaurant businesses destroyed just because of this.
Well, most businesses have a small margin that they operate on for their income and their expenses. Most of these restaurants, the proprietor does not own the building. They're leasing space, probably leasing a very expensive equipment. This all rolls downhill. It's not just the restaurants that go out. The landlords where the restaurants are domiciled, who are they going to rent that space to? The banks that hold the mortgages that can't be paid. The cascading effect of these businesses closing will be dramatic because everything's connected to everything else. The suppliers that supply all the products that the restaurants use, of course, all the employees of the restaurant. And restaurants are an excellent example because they are so prevalent in our society. From the smallest villages, we'll have a corner cafe to, obviously the bigger cities. Doug, there's no precedence for this. There simply is none. The Great Depression was small potatoes compared to this. The speed at which this has happened, the dramatic long-term effects on our society, on our culture, on our economy, it's different. Everybody's guessing. There's no training in any college that teaches economics that would teach men and women how to deal with this, because there's no precedence for it. It's never happened before, ever, in human history. All-out war would be the closest thing, where perhaps attack on Poland by Germany, an attack on France by Germany, something of that nature would be as close as we could come to what's taking place here, Doug.
Right, exactly. And I like that analogy. You know, this crisis, if that's the word to be used, this event has his impact on a number of areas. Last week, Eric Holder, I don't know whether you saw this or not, the former Attorney General Eric Holder under Obama said that he sees coronavirus as an opportunity to change the way U.S. citizens vote forever. And I thought, how convenient when I read this article. Coronavirus, he says it gives us an opportunity to revamp our electoral system so that it permanently becomes a more inclusive, it becomes more inclusive and becomes easier for the American people to access. What in the hell does that have to do with the current situation we're in, if in fact this is a legitimate situation? I somebody tell me. It's a mystery to me. It just, you know, I don't know.
Well, it is, but Eric Holt is a player, or sure, he wouldn't have been. When I say a player, that means he is part of the New World Order. He wouldn't have had that position. Of course, he was the public head of the Fast and Furious operation as the Attorney General, which there never has been any public recognition of what truly took place with Fast and Furious, although there has been some recognition that Americans have lost lives because of Fast and Furious. That was a program to allegedly send firearms to criminals in Mexico in order to track how they came back. Of course, there was no tracking mechanism.
Right. Yeah, and it's hard to do.
Many of them, it's and hard many to of, do. And many of them did come back. Many of them did come back. Yeah. With innocent Americans losing their lives as a consequence of this very ill-fated program that the Department of Justice ran. So I wouldn't trust the word that if Eric Holder said the sun is shining, I'd look outside the window to see if it was. Nothing. That's consistent with him and his beliefs. Now, we have to keep in mind that we have I think the first time in more than a century, a former president who lives a few blocks down from the current president in Washington, D.C. I am somewhat a student of history, but I have no knowledge of any president since 1900 who's done that. Typically, they get out of Dodge. They've had enough of that snake pit. When their term is over, they get out of Dodge and go back to some sense of normality. So the president, Obama, and his chief of staff, Valerie Jarrett, the Muslim communist, who's another Muslim communist like Obama is, they're right down the street. There's a lot of speculation about what role Obama may or may not play and what's coming up, his connections to the United Nations, for example. I can easily see what we're living right now, Doug, become civil disorder. We have a very fragile system of supply and delivery of food all over the country. It would not take much to disrupt it. No. It wouldn't take much to disrupt the EBT cards. And that has happened in localized areas. If one or the other or both happened, we'd be in big trouble within hours, nationwide, especially the big cities. The powers that be know that. The George Soros funded, trained, and equipped protesters know that. And I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop, Doug, because I think that other shoe is going to drop.
I do too. I don't think Americans are going to put up with much more of this. You've got rallies in Michigan. You've got rallies in Texas. I think there was a rally yesterday in Texas. You've got all of these freedom rallies, people demanding that we get back to business, and rightfully so. And as you said from the beginning, you know, you quarantine sick people. You just don't stop everything and quarantine everybody. That just doesn't work that way.
No. Well, the closest thing, you know, the 1918 Spanish flu, which went on for a better part of 2 years, we got through it. We lost a lot of people. It was far worse in terms of how fatal it was. Pretty healthy people would get it and be dead within 24 hours. That was happening. It happened tens of thousands of times. This flu is not that bad. It's bad. It hurts you. It puts you down. And if you're at risk, it will kill you. But 1918, 1919, we didn't shut down the country. We quarantined and took care of the sick people. That's what we did. And that's what's been done for centuries. Just because it's 2020 doesn't mean we should do that particular thing any differently. And I hope that President Trump understands this, and I believe he does. He's getting advice from people that I wouldn't trust at all. Dr. Fauci, for example, why he didn't lose his medical license after he was in charge of the nationwide response of a fatal disease, 100% fatal disease that was contagious, 100% contagious fatal disease. He was in charge of the national response of that, where they did not track and quarantine the sick people. That, of course, was AIDS.
1981, he came out with a prophylactic drug back in 1981. And when did AIDS against AIDS or HIV AIDS? And then 1984-85 is when AIDS hit the, it became known as HIV AIDS.
Right.
And I find that very interesting. You got to, you know, the time, it's just backwards, a little backwards there. So yeah, you're right. And he was a big part of that. You're exactly correct.
Well, sounds like he created a cure for a disease that did not yet exist.
Well, a treatment, by the way, it didn't work out well.
But then
you've got Gates during the and you can see the relationship between Gates and Hillary Clinton, Gates and Obama, Gates and, for crying out loud, or Fauci. Did I say Gates? Right. Fauci with Gates. So what I meant to say was you can see the relationship between Fauci and Obama, Hillary, the World Health Organization, and of course Bill Gates. So you've got a very compact or a very small group, I believe, of criminals. When I say small, relative to us, the law, the people who care about the Constitution, the rule of law. So we can do something. We need the will to do it. Or maybe we need the event. What do we need? I mean, why aren't we doing something right now? Why aren't we, if we're business owners, open up our businesses? What's preventing us from doing it? If everyone did it, if everyone opened their businesses, what in the hell, tell me, what would they do? What would the government do? What could they do? Are they going to arrest everybody?
Well, that's where licensing comes in. Nearly every restaurant in this country has been issued a license by the health department to be in business. Mm-hmm. And the health departments at the county level have been issuing these orders on how they may and may not conduct business. So if they open their doors for seated, and I know Missouri and many of the 50 states, carry out restaurants only. So if they open up the dining area and the health department learns of that, they could pull their license, and then they'd be out of business. That's it. They'd be finished.
But if you had an entire, like St. Louis or Springfield or whatever, let's say you had every restaurant in St. Louis that has been closed because of this, say, no, we're going to reopen. As a matter of fact, Wednesday at 9 o'clock in the morning, we're all going to reopen.
Well, that's what it would take. It would take some kind of coordinated effort. It wouldn't take necessarily 100%, but if, oh, say 75% or so of the restaurants agreed to, actually it would be a conspiracy, because when two or more people agree to commit a crime, they're actually, conspiring, which is a separate crime in and of itself. You know that, Doug.
Sure.
If the restaurants conspired to commit this crime and all did it at the same time, the health departments would be put in a very bad position to go against that. Politically, they would be. They'd be on solid ground legally, but in a very bad position politically. I would love to see that happen. And in smaller areas, smaller jurisdictions, smaller counties, there's more, about 3,300 counties. I can see that happening sooner in smaller counties than in the larger ones. But it would be a great thing, Doug. Maybe we can advocate that here on your show and see some of these restaurant owners get together and do that at the county level.
Or not just restaurant, but any business. don't tell me, you know, the governor, plastic face from, Michigan. I don't know. She walks too close to a 100-watt light bulb. I think her face is going to melt. I don't know what's wrong with her Gretchen Whitmer. And if she's got a medical issue, I'm sorry. But for crying out loud, you know, seeds, you can't buy seeds at a store. You're going to determine what's essential and what's not. Seeds are non-essential. I can't plant my garden because of your say so. It's in the same store where you're buying essential merchandise, but I can't go down that aisle. Oh, heaven forbid.
Is that still enforced, Doug? I know it was that way.
I'm not sure. I know there's different states where that, right. Vermont and Michigan. But it seems to be getting worse and worse. And we have to push back. And I think we are, from what I saw yesterday in Austin, from what I saw in Lansing. And oh, by the way, we had, in fact, I didn't have, maybe during the top of the hour break, I can show you what happened in New Hampshire. We have a couple of listeners up there and people part of the program, Kevin and Matt, actually protesting as well, the state capitol. Okay, so we are, you know, we're causing things to happen. Kiss My Constitution was one of the big signs.
All right. I like that.
So, yeah. But anyway, so good stuff. But yeah, you know, John, I think I'm tired. I'm getting too old for this. I know you are too. You're older than I am by
a little bit.
Eras. Geological eras.
Well,
we got to do something.
We need. What our listeners can do is act locally. Yeah. All our listeners, at least the American ones that live in the United States, they live in a county. It's fairly easy, and you don't have to travel too far to be politically active at the county level, to meet and get to know the people who help run the county. I'm not talking only about elected officials, but the pastors of the churches, the principals of the schools, the business owners, all the various civic organizations, the Elks, the Lions, the Chamber of Commerce, and so forth, the various community leaders. When those people get together, say the Chamber of Commerce, for example, and they're having their, well, they can't have a meeting, can they? But when they talk privately or get together in groups of two or three, up to 10, I think we have a national restriction of 10 or more, of 11 or more people.
When it's unconstitutional, people, though. I mean,
right. Which it is.
Yeah, screw that.
We're talking about reality here. Organization is more difficult when you can't get together and talk to people.
Right.
But that needs to happen. That needs to happen. These community leaders that I just mentioned, they need to be talking to each other and say, we've had enough. We're going to open our county. We're going to open our businesses and go back to business as normal while taking prudent precautions to deal with this communicable disease, which is has a possibility that if you're fat enough and sick enough, it could kill you. But you have to be fat enough and sick enough for it to kill you. Otherwise, you'll get what amounts to a bad flu and be healthy again in two or three days. So that's what needs to happen. There's a place for protest, and I understand that. And if it accomplishes something other than making people feel good, that's good. But the local level, at the county level, with the community leaders that I just mentioned, that's where the action is going to be. That's where the action needs to take place, is at the county level, at the village level, at the small city level. And within a big city, big cities are split up into various boroughs and political subdivisions. At that level is where the action needs to be taking place, Doug.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, it takes more manpower. It takes a lot more, the project is bigger. If you try to get 100,000 people to march on Washington, but if you can get 1,000 people to march on your state capitol, that's different. Or even 500 at your county courthouse or your mayor's office. That's different too. So we can make changes like that. And I think that that's what we need to do. And, you know, the initiative has to come from us because, look, I've got my copy of my Constitution. I've got a copy of my Bible. All right. And those are my two guidebooks. The Constitution says you can't infringe upon my right for assembly. It doesn't say except in times of COVID-19 or, you know, pandemics. It doesn't say that. So I can, nowhere in the Constitution.
Well, and you're right, Doug, all during the Spanish flu, 1918, 1920, the churches still met. The businesses were still open. Yeah, people got sick. People were quarantined. The sick people were quarantined. We did not shut down the United States. Ford Motor Company didn't stop making cars. The libraries were open. The restaurants were open. The churches were open. And we dealt with a contagious disease that was far more fatal than this one. And we dealt with it successfully. There was a lot of anguish and a lot of grief and a lot of death. That's unfortunate. But we got through it and life went on. Now, we can get through this. We will get through this. I want to see, and I agree with you, I want to see business owners, business and community leaders say, we've had enough of this. Now, at my website, Doug, at thelibertyman.com, we've got a lot of evidence. There's Dr. Buttar. This man could be three doctors. He's got so many medical science-related degrees, he could be three doctors, Dr. Buttar, giving a 48-minute interview.
I've got that queued up at the 3-minute mark at the kind of the sweet spot. You want to show people that? I'm not sure how many.
Well,
people.
Why don't we
go ahead?
Do about maybe a couple of minutes. Just give people a little teaser, a movie trailer. It's typically about 2.5-3 minutes long. Why don't we do that? 3 minutes.
All right. So now this, I did not get this from thelibertyman.com. This I think was organic from Next News Network, is that right?
It was seen 4 million times in 72 hours.
Right, that's from the Next News
Network. This thing's exploding on the internet.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Eric the Tech, that is clip. You got it? Go ahead. Here it is.
It didn't bother me. However, as I started looking at this information, as I started seeing that this is actually a chimeric version, something that was developed here in the United States in 2015, it was published in Nature magazine, that it was developed in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where all the initial studies were done. The chimeric research, despite having a moratorium by the U.S. government to prevent any chimeric research, by the way, just so your audience understands, chimeric research basically means that they're taking a naturally occurring substance or virus, in this case, and then mutating it, genetically modifying it, changing the configuration morphologically to gain function. It's called a gain of function study or gain of function research. And that basically means that they're making something that already may have some potential to cause harm, making it more harmful, making it more virulent, making it more resistant. And basically that's what I found, that they took the SHC014 strain of the coronavirus, the surface antigen component, and brought in the backbone from the SARS coronavirus, put them together, and then inserted HIV and MERS orthologs on top of it to make a more virulent, more detrimental virus. Now, the thing is that
if I could jump in for just a moment here, because what I think you're talking about is the moratorium that was placed, and then $3.7 million from the National Institute of Health was transferred to China so they could continue this research, even though the moratorium, so they basically outsourced this research to China. Is this the same topic we're talking about here? This news is just breaking?
Yes, this is exactly right. So it goes back to 2014. The U.S. government decided, based upon certain virologists at that time, saying that, look, there's no justification for this kind of research. There's a potential for it to cause harm, cause a pandemic. So there's no justification for us to do this type of research. So the government passed a moratorium in 2014. Fauci approved budgets to be, monies to be sectioned for this type of research. So basically, and I'm getting really, every time I think about this, it gets me really flustered because I'm so angry that he basically broke the law. He more than broke the law. He created this entire cascade that we're seeing with the world shutdown was created by this initial aspect back in 2015. He broke the law. He went against government moratoriums. He took taxpayer money and he funded research that has now led to the COVID-19. In 2017, he was documented at Georgetown University saying that there will be a pandemic that this presidency will face, that this term will face. How did he know that in 2017 that something was going to happen in 2018, 19, or 2020? There's no, you can't predict the market from 3 days from today, what's going to happen. How did he know that there was going to be a pandemic? He stated the president of this president will face a pandemic. The exact quote, I don't want to say the exact words. You guys have the video footage. My point is that when somebody starts making these type of
enough here, Doug.
Okay.
Yeah. I mentioned initially, Dr. Buttar had, you know, first of all, becoming a regular medical doctor means basically 10 to 12 years education after high school. And, you know, 4 years of undergraduate, 4 years, 3 to 4 years of medical school, and then the residency. Well, he's way beyond that in terms of certifications and qualifications. This is, and he's also a veteran of the war and special forces, which, of course, adds to his credibility, in my opinion. This is not some conspiracy theory. This is a highly, highly qualified medical doctor slash scientist talking about the real deal. Now, what they were dancing around there, these two of these men during this interview, that they weren't saying, I'll say it on their behalf. It's against international law to fabricate biological weapons. On the face of it, it is.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you can call it whatever you want. You can call a motorcycle a pickup truck, but it's still a motorcycle. You can call this research, medical research, but it's still manufacturing a biological weapon. And that's illegal by international treaty. It's illegal to fabricate biological weapons, and we've signed these treaties. The United States is a signatory to the international treaties that we will not engage in fabricating, in making biological weapons. There's more documentation at my website. Dr. Lynn Horowitz wrote a letter giving the documentation also that this is, in fact, this COVID-19 Chinese flu is, in fact, a biological weapon. That's what makes it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, you know, John, you say that on, if you write that on Facebook or on Twitter, do you realize that, of course, you know, the warning pops up and says this is fake news, and it takes you to the fact checker, and the fact checker is the doctor that oversaw that very lab in Wuhan, okay? That was creating these, was the recipient of the gain of function, research and product, and the overseer of this function, of this, process. So it's just.
Right. Well, that's been exposed publicly. Thank goodness that's been exposed publicly.
Yes.
There's an excellent book. I know many of your listeners are readers like you and I are. Simple one word title, Biohazard. The author, he anglicized his name. He escaped from Russia, having been working at a high level most of his adult life in the Russian biological weapons program. Ken Alabek. The title of the book is Biohazard. And he talks in great detail how they fabricate biological weapons, germ warfare, in other words. Despite the treaties, which were signed by the United States, which were signed by Russia, that research never stopped in Russia or in the United States, and obviously it never stopped in China. Now, the research in this country took place mostly at two places, which is now other places, I'm sure, Fort Meade, Maryland, and Plum Island. Now, Plum Island has been for sale now for several years. I don't know if anybody's ever going to buy it. It's about 300 to 400 acres. The aerial photographs make it look like a very large golf course with about 5 buildings on it. That's been moved to Kansas, about the worst place you could put that kind of facility, but that's where they moved it to. So the research never stopped. Despite the treaties, despite the international law, the research to develop biological weapons never stopped. Now, why we would engage in that activity with an obvious enemy, potential enemy of the United States, that being China, why would we do such a thing? Cooperate and engage in joint research with a potential enemy. That's just off the charts crazy. It makes no sense at all. Obviously driven by two things, lots of money and cooperation at the highest levels between these men and women who shouldn't be cooperating with each other. They simply should not. Well, Doug, our listeners are left with having to deal with this. We aren't going to change anything at that level. What we need to do is work on making sure our families are safe, that our businesses can get back into business and prosper once again, despite these things going on. And people need to be clever. They need to think outside the box, so to speak, so whatever business they've got can continue. I'm seeing advertisements on TV. The automobile dealerships are offering to deliver cars to you. Real estate companies are doing virtual video tours of real estate for sale. So they are working on getting it back together. Excuse me, I need to cough here.
No, that's fine. And folks, John Moore every Monday, thelibertyman.com. Good friend of the program, good friend of mine, knows what he's talking about. There it is on your screen, the web presence for John Moore, Mr. John Moore, in his radio program Monday through Friday can be heard right there at RBN. Right off of his website. So there it is. Tune in and make sure you listen throughout the week. Different guests, different topics, different ideas, but always informative. And that's the web presence for Mr. John Moore. Okay. You okay now?
Absolutely. All right. Just a quick cough. My grandson just graduated. He's in his last semester. He started being approached by professional football teams, recruiters several years ago. His potential NFL career is on hold because of all this. You can't have football games with no people. And he's devastated, but he recognizes that being reality. Now he's looking at Plan B, and I'm helping him look at Plan B for himself. And so he can have a productive life ahead for him while staying in shape, to do some tryouts and that they have for, the various, there's actually about four different football leagues, the United States and Canada and Europe, which I didn't know that, but there are. The effects on individuals and families, it's hard to estimate and measure. And we may not, what we're going through right now, Doug, is historic. There will be hundreds of books written on what's taking place right now in 2020, that people can read and review decades into the future. The things we do right now will have an impact years and decades into the future, won't it, Doug?
Yes, indeed it will. And a couple of things I was thinking of, and folks, don't throw tomatoes at me. Boy, I wonder what this has done to office, extramarital office romances. What do you think, huh? Boy, that put a really crimp in the style of some people, hadn't it? But anyway.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Actually, the Wall Street Journal ran an article that committed couples living together are having issues. They're fearful of even kissing, if you can believe that.
Really? Because of the virus, you mean? The transmission of the virus?
Well, that appears to be the case, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth. I suspect there's probably very little of that. If your relationship is that fragile to begin with, I don't think it has much long-term hope.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier in the show here about the people sitting in their vehicles, with social distancing, watching a sunset, getting tickets from the local gendarmes. I can imagine the officers who did that being made fun of by their fellow officers when they got back at the end of the shift. How humiliating to be involved in law enforcement and have to face your fellow officers after you've written tickets for people watching a sunset in the privacy and comfort and safe distance of their motor vehicles.
But they were enforcing this law, which is unconstitutional, but they were enforcing this. So, correct me.
They're given no choice. If they want a paycheck and a pension, they're given no choice.
But, okay,
so. It's a very powerful motivator.
Right. So help me though, because you're in tune with law enforcement, as I am. Now, the people that you're familiar with, this is not okay with them, right? I mean, having to do this?
They would be humiliated. They'd be embarrassed. They would be made fun of by their fellow officers who are actually fighting real crime. And they would hang their head in shame that they engaged in such an activity. But they're going to do it because the motivation, like I said, of a paycheck and a pension is a pretty strong motivator, especially if you've been on the force 8, 10 plus years, you've got a wife, you've got a mortgage, you've got kids. You can't walk away from a paycheck and a pension very easily. And they'll suck it up and do it because of that motivation to put food on the table for their family. It's just an unfortunate circumstance. I saw the same thing as a young man when I was in Special Forces. I was only 21 years old. Many of the men I worked with were old enough to be my father. They knew the Vietnam War was wrong. They knew that what we were doing there was not right. They knew it was basically a huge lie. But they had families, they had children, they had a mortgage, and they couldn't walk away from that and do anything publicly about it. So they just sucked it up. And they did their job. And that's what we're seeing right now with these police officers. They have to suck it up and do their job or face the consequences of being unemployed in an economy that's facing 50% unemployment.
Isn't that an easy way out though, John? I mean, that sounds a lot like, the Nuremberg defense to me. Look, I'm just following orders and I gotta follow orders because.
Well, it's not quite that dramatic.
Okay, but if all the cops said,
in principle,
I ain't doing it. Go ahead.
In principle, I agree with you. As a matter of degree, it's not even close. And I don't know what level misdemeanor or if it's an ordinance violation. Is it in fact a misdemeanor or ordinance violation?
No, it's a misdemeanor according to the news reports.
Of course, these reporters may not know the difference. But regardless, I agree with you in principle on one hand. On the other, it's a matter of degree. The majority of these tickets are going to be given the same legal value as going 8 or 10 miles over the speed limit, a routine administrative thing. I agree with you. It should not be happening. I agree with you. The police officers shouldn't be doing it. And maybe they can figure out a way to make sure that the people who did this, which would be the mayors, for example, or county councils, probably a mayor would be responsible to make sure there's some pushback against these mayors for taking officers off the street who should be protecting the public from crime and getting them to do this. That's where the pushback should be. And from the police unions, many of these officers belong to a union, and that would be an appropriate place, a safe venue for protests to take place. And typically, the leader of a police officer's union can get some airtime in front of a TV camera and make fun of these mayors for taking law enforcement away from what they should be doing.
Very interesting. You're always a little bit more rational than I am, and I appreciate that. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. Fellow member of the Hagmann Report, John Moore, the Liberty Man. .com. That's his website. Every Monday is with me. Just going through what's taking place right now, attempting to bring you some rational, sensible, sane, answers while asking some very important questions. Going to be right back. You're listening to the Hagmann Report. Stay right where you're at.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report, watching the Hagman Report. This is the 20th day of April, 2020. 4/20/2020. Does that mean anything to you? I don't know. But I know yesterday was the commemoration of Lexington and Concord, and I think that's kind of where we're headed now. Daniel Horowitz from the Conservative Review posted an article, I think it was earlier this morning. He put together a constitutional case against the governors, for example, in this case, and why there is a federal role, especially for Congress, to enforce the true definition of the 14th Amendment. Governors are not gods. State executives cannot simply do whatever they want indefinitely. For example, he writes, you know, can a state violate the 1st, 5th, and 14th Amendments, confine Americans and close their businesses indefinitely, regulate interstate commerce, all without federal intervention? And, of course, he asks that question. And the answer, of course, it should be a no-brainer to anyone who is not constitutionally illiterate. Stated differently, anyone who knows the Constitution knows that that's not consistent with the Constitution. Yet for the political class who don't seem to recognize anything outside of the bounds of federal powers until this month, suddenly we're back to the Articles of Confederation. That I'll put the link in the program description box of Hagman Report Live, as I will to John's site, thelibertyman.com, good friend of the program, good friend of mine. And we were talking during the break, and it was kind of an interesting discussion. In fact, I'll let John just say what he's telling me during the break. And I think it's, you know, look, I think it's, we need to push this with all we got. So John, go ahead. I mean.
Well, okay. Well, I was talking about restaurants, and in parts of the country, which is much of the country that has winter is coming to an end. And we have a nationwide shutdown of most of our restaurants for inside dining. Well, if there's space in a local restaurant that I visit frequently, they've got space to have outside dining. They typically don't. They never have had. But they got space to set up tables and chairs under cover of a porch so they could serve meals and be in compliance with the county health department. And I think that's probably the case in much of the country. If there's space outside for outside dining, just serve the meals in disposable plates and knives, plastic knives and forks, paper napkins, let people sit outside, dispose of the waste product in a can, and be on their way, and be in compliance with the health department's rules. Overhead cover now is rather inexpensive to buy and set up also. In the heat of the day, you probably wouldn't want to sit in direct sunshine, but even in the heat of the day, if you're sitting in the shade, it's probably going to be okay to consume lunch or dinner and be on your way and still be in compliance with the health department. I would love to see that happen all over the country. The restaurant that I visit, I've sat on their porch every week for the last 3 weeks and had lunch despite the ban on inside dining. So people, these businesses need to be creative to still be in business, serve their customers. And at some point, it may become a matter of civil disobedience. If that's what it takes, if you're faced with bankruptcy and going out of business or civil disobedience to save your business, I think I'd take civil disobedience as an alternative to going out of business and losing everything. Don't you think, Doug?
No, I totally agree. My question is, why do I, as a business owner, why must I conform, comply, twist, contort for illegal. I understand the intent here, but why should I be made to do certain things to contort and ultimately comply with laws that are really unconstitutional? It shouldn't have to be that way. Now, I agree that those who do, okay, will be further ahead. I agree with that. And I agree that there's a level of goodwill involved and, you know, but man, I don't like the circumstance. I don't like what they are telling me that I've got to do. That's just me. You know, I don't know.
Right. Well, the combination of fear and ignorance is on the part of the people making these decisions. Complicity, I think, is only at the very highest levels, at the level of Fauci and maybe some of the governors, as far as not being knowingly complicit with this fraud that's being perpetrated. At the county level, it's driven by fear and ignorance. Fear of people dying, ignorance of what's really going on. And those are tough things. And of course, the mass media is driving this. This is largely fear-driven. The numbers of deaths are being blown out of proportion. The response is not the response that should be happening. We should be responding the way Western civilization has responded for centuries. You quarantine the sick people. You don't quarantine the entire culture unless you want to lose the culture, lose your country, lose your economy. This economy, even after this short period of time, will not recover for at least a year, maybe 2 years. There's no precedence to even know, Doug.
Well, I think you're being pretty charitable. If it ever recovers, I don't.
If it ever.
Yeah.
If ever.
Yeah.
And if this thing goes on past the end of April, all bets are off in terms of recovering.
Is that their intent, though? Is it to take down the economy because our current economy is not sustainable, do you think? Or one of their intents?
Well, what's not sustainable is the debt. That's what's not sustainable. Well,
correct.
And I find it ironic. It was revealed about a year ago that the Department of Defense has lost an amount of money roughly equivalent to the national debt, about $20, $21 trillion. In fact, a friend of mine was doing work for the Pentagon, and he was uncovering several millions of dollars of fraud and waste, and he lost his job because of it. He wasn't supposed to find fraud and waste, and that was the tip of an iceberg, literally. You know, I don't know how many millions of dollars it was, but it was millions. There's nothing wrong with our economy. What's wrong is the spending that is unaccountable and apparently unnecessary. How can an organization such as the Department of Defense misplace $20 or $21 trillion? How is that even possible, Doug? It boggles the mind.
An amount equivalent
to our national debt.
Or maybe it went to fund some off-the-books project. I don't know. But, yeah, how can you – I'll tell you something. We've got bookkeepers here. I've got a bookkeeper. And if my bookkeeper – actually, my wife does the books, but it gets audited by CPA. But if she made a mistake, lost, you know, I don't know, anything more than $100, I'd be really torqued. And you know, we'd have a go. All right. So, but that amount of money, seriously? That amount of money?
Right. Well, getting back to the original premise, there's nothing wrong or broken with our economy. What's wrong and broken is accountability at the federal level with all that. So, what's not sustainable is building up the debt, because that debt has to be serviced, and it's serviced with interest. That's what's not sustainable. And perhaps it was time for that thing to collapse. I don't know. But it certainly long-term was not sustainable to keep building up that debt with the interest that it does carry with it.
Interesting, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes. Getting back to our listeners and their situation, our listeners need to be aware of this. Our listeners need to look at alternative ways to have income, to eliminate debt any way they can, to preserve capital. And that's going to be different things for different people. It may be good quality farmland for one person. Maybe a collectible automobile like my Triumph TR6. Maybe gold and silver coins for somebody else. Or highly collectible firearms for someone else. Or antiques that have a known demonstrable value. It's going to be different things for different people to preserve wealth, preserve capital for future use. We will get through this. There'll be a new normal. I don't know what that new normal is going to be, but there'll be a new normal. But gold and silver coins will still have value. Farmland will still have valuable. Collectibles will still have valuable. And life will go on somehow, some way, when we get on the other side of this, Doug. And the decisions people are making right now will determine the outcome they have 6 months or 6 years in the future, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I almost disagree with you when you say that we're going to get through this, we'll have a new normal, because what I see the globalists want is this ID 2020. I keep seeing ID 2020. I keep seeing Bill Gates as being this master of this invisible, quantum tattoo, identification system. And you know, if you don't comply, boy, just look at China. There goes your social credit score. There goes your ability to conduct business. Maybe this is the preparation right now to say, you know what? You guys are going to get in line and take what we give you, or you won't come back. You're not going to come back until the all clear is given. And we're going to give the all clear.
Well, Doug, you're describing a new normal is what you're doing. That's what you're describing. Okay. You're describing a new normal. I don't like it.
I don't see anything normal about that. I see a new abnormal. I see the objective accomplished. And I'll tell you one thing. You know what? You might as well shoot me with lead instead of other heavy metals, because I ain't taking it. You know?
Well, normal doesn't mean you like it. Normal means that's simply the way it is. I was in a situation where it was normal for me to be shot at least once a day in Vietnam, or go through a mortar attack every 2 or 3 days. That was normal. I didn't like it. So normal doesn't have any predication that you like it. And normal is just the way things are. And so there will be a new normal. It may be something we like, something we don't like, something completely unconstitutional, but there will be a new normal. And I don't know what that's going to be. I know the possibilities, just like you do. The possibilities have a wide range from really nice to draconian.
No, that's true.
Where it's going to fall, and the powers that be have their plans and what they want to accomplish, but they have a lot of opposition and from very determined people at every level. There's people that they think are part of their new world order that aren't. They're pretending to be at very high levels. And they will be patriots, and they will do sabotage of the new world order in ways that they can't even guess right now. And that sabotage could take place in all kinds of forms, I should say. It may be sabotaging a computer program, or it may be something else. But there will be resistance at every level, Doug. You can count on it.
Well, look at the older women or older woman, I guess, in the UK setting fire to a 5G tower. I believe that was the situation. Believing, of course, and rightfully so, that the 5G tower and the 5G represented a threat to her and her children and her grandchildren's safety and health. And you know, there is the Dr. Batar that we were playing does discuss there's that connection there. And I believe that there is, he identifies it as something akin to, altitude sickness because of the inability of the oxygen molecules to, get in the lungs. But anyway, so you're right. I think sabotage will in fact be part of this. And okay, I'm okay with that. Sadly, I mean, maybe not sadly. Right. I'm okay with
that. Right. Well, the Army doesn't want to admit it, but during the Vietnam War, there were literally thousands of acts of sabotage in the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Many, many thousands. These men figured out real quick that what they were doing was illegal and immoral, and they did what they could privately and individually to sabotage the war effort. And that's not well known or talked about publicly very much, but I know for a fact that it took place. And it will take place in this matter also. Small acts of sabotage, large acts of sabotage by patriot men and women doing the right thing for the right reasons. And that'll be part of this. And we can count on it, Doug, as just Americans doing what Americans do, which is work towards liberty. And I don't know how the direction is going to go or how fast, but I know that patriotic Americans, once this becomes clear that tyranny is upon us, there will be sabotage by men and women in the military, in the police, in various corporations. They won't be known who they are. What they do will be done privately, will never be discovered as to who did it. And that will be part of this as well, won't it, Doug?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I remember, you know, the Vietnam War, and I remember hearing, I have no firsthand knowledge, but some sabotage, I guess it would be the word for it. To make sure, especially with things in countries that we had no business being in, or Cambodia in other areas. But of course, Walter Cronkite never explained how it was in that time period. You're right. But yes, and I find it very interesting and even refreshing that Fauci, right now, coming to the present day, you know, is so vociferously condemning protesters, people wanting their economies to reopen, and saying that, or clamoring for the end of the lockdown, and you know, giving 1,000 reasons why that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. So I think he's starting to show his stripes, and people are starting to see through him a little bit, except for those who carry his water in the mainstream media.
Right. Well, Fauci is legitimately a criminal, in my opinion. He's engaged in criminal activity, in my opinion, being part of anything to do with making biological weapons is a violation of international law. And the International Court, which I doubt would do it, but the International Court at The Hague could certainly go after him and many hundreds of others. Americans and Chinese, and probably Russians also, for being involved in the criminal activity of fabricating biological weapons. I doubt we're going to see that happen, but it could and should, shouldn't it, Doug?
Yeah, I agree. Do you think, given the fact that this, and if you send me an email saying that this is not a man-made biological weapon, tweaked weapon, then, I'm not going to even answer you, because I think that the preponderance of evidence, I think we've got prima facie evidence as best we as external researchers can, who must rely upon doctors, like you saw earlier, to prove that it is. But do you think that this, we're just seeing the beginning of something a little bit more, maybe this is kind of a trial balloon, you know, and that's going to get worse. Maybe in the fall.
I think it has every possibility of getting worse. Now, going back to 2 months ago, I was in contact with healthcare professionals, a young woman I'm related to by marriage. They were issued letters by their employers, giving them a way to get through checkpoints. Now, that shows a level of planning that most people are not aware of. And Homeland Security was involved in issuing these letters as well. So I think we're at the beginning of something that will have checkpoints that you won't be able to get through those checkpoints unless you've got proper paperwork, proper credentials to get through checkpoints on the public highways. I think there's a strong possibility that, and it's backed up by the evidence, that these credentials have already been issued to healthcare professionals. The young woman I'm related to by marriage, she's a supervisor at a security company, a security and alarm company. These letters were issued for a reason. They're issued because there's a belief by the people issuing them, including Homeland Security, that they're going to be needed. And who would know better if they're going to be needed than Homeland Security, Doug?
Good point. And I'm just wondering, at what point do we say, well, screw this. You know, you're not going to require me to have a letter or permission authorization for me to drive from my house to the grocery store or wherever, you know.
The checkpoints would be at county lines and at state lines. That's where the checkpoints would be, in my opinion.
And again, I'm an American. If I want to visit my cousin in New York, damn it, I'm going to cross that state line, letter or no letter. And tell me where in the Constitution that they have the right to stop me of interstate travel. And second of all, what's it going to take for us to say, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. Shouldn't we do this? Shouldn't we engage in civil disobedience? Because I'm getting sick and tired. I am tired as hell of these unconstitutional orders, these unconstitutional mandates, the Gates-a-thon, the Fauci, deification. I'm tired of this. And I'm just waiting for somebody to say, all right, you know, this is my line. This is my line.
I think you've interviewed Matt Bracken on your show, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I have.
Well, Matt Bracken has written books that have similar circumstances, not exactly the same, but similar, where checkpoints have been set up on the public roads, and it does not have a good outcome for the authorities doing that. In fact, it has a fatal outcome for the authorities doing that. And the one account that I read that Bracken wrote, of course, this is fiction, had a very plausible scenario where they were looking for firearms. They were stopping motor vehicles on the public roads looking for firearms. And so one car approaches, and the gentleman, he's in his minivan with his wife and a couple of kids. The officer asks him if he has any firearms in the vehicle, and he gets a response quoting the Constitution that unless he's got a warrant, he has no right to ask that question or search his vehicle. The officer, who's worked a double shift and is tired and hungry, he overreacts, pulls the gentleman out of the car, and starts beating him. Two cars back is a active duty Navy SEAL officer who sees this and gets out to help the civilian. And it ends up in a firefight and a bunch of people being killed. So that's plausible.
Yeah.
That's very plausible. You know, it's not some flight of fancy to see where something like that could easily go down at a checkpoint. I know it's in my DNA that if I see an innocent person being harmed by anybody, that I will react. I will react instantly to protect innocent life, which is what the Navy officer did in Bracken's book. It's just a matter of who we are as alpha male protectors. That's who we are, Doug. We're alpha male protectors, and that's what we do.
And it kind of saddens me to see a lot of the men aren't men anymore. And I think, again, that's by design. That's by the fluoridation, the drugs.
Oh, it is.
You know, by all of this stuff.
Women, the women I know under age 40, they tell me the following. They say, John, I can't find a real man to date. That's what women under 40 tell me. Yeah. John, I can't find a real man to date. And that's sad. The alpha males are becoming an extinct group of men, it seems like, here, Doug.
Yeah, and it's funny when we get laughed at as a group and individually, when we say things like, you know, the water, the specific water is turning frogs gay, for example. And, that's a big, that's just a bunch of BS. Well, you know, the science behind that. No. There's this, this effeminate process. Is that a word? Is that a verb? I guess, the process of effemination. Anyway. It taking place because of the chemical castration. And I don't think we can ignore this anymore. And John, look at the moral issues we have. Just, speaking of that, let me just, tell you this. I just saw this and I just wanted to beat my head against the wall when I saw this. U.S. clinics report up to a 400% rise in abortion requests amid pandemic. Okay, 400%. These women are going out there and murdering their unborn children at 400% rise. What in the hell is wrong with these people?
They're scared. They're scared.
Well, you know what? I remember my wife being afraid when she was pregnant too. Well, what, you know, and that was a long time ago. But so what?
Well, that's my response. It's fear-based. They're making decisions based on fear. Generally, it's not a good idea to make any major decision when you're in a state of fear. It may work out for you, but there's a high likelihood that it won't work out for you.
Do you think that was planned? Because you're right. They are afraid. You know, the women who have been calling, these clinics, we're uncertain about bringing a baby into this world when it's so unpredictable and all of a sudden. And you know what? I'm worried about money and I'm worried about unemployment. Et cetera. That's the driver, right?
It is a driver, and it's fear-based, and it's an understandable fear because what we're going through is very scary. It's very scary. You know, I recall I was in my next to last semester of college, and I walked into the supermarket, and above the meat counter and the vegetable counter and so forth were 4x8 white sheets of plywood and with black letters that gave the prices that could be charged. This was wage price control under Nixon. And that was scary.
To
walk into a supermarket. And at the front of the supermarket, they had all these shelves with canned items, plain white labels with black letters that said green beans, or it said pork and beans, or it said corn. And just plain white labels with black letters, that all this stuff appeared overnight. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, you know, I get through the war, I get through the military, I'm graduating from college, I'm ready to start my life, and here this economy is falling apart around my ears. And
yeah. I come home to this, right? Yeah.
Do you remember those days?
Yes, I do. I remember the so-called energy crisis, which was not an energy crisis.
It was all fabricated.
Odd even
we
license.
My hometown, St. Louis, on the Mississippi River, and we were getting reports from the guys on the river that all those massive tanks up and down the Mississippi River with petroleum products were all topped off during the alleged petroleum gasoline shortage. They were all topped off.
Oh, those were the days, you know. Yeah. But now, you know, now gas is what, 12, or not gas, but oil is just an incredibly low, right now it's incredibly low, which can't be good, by the way, for Russia, John. I don't know, given their.
Well, they don't have anything else to sell.
Right.
They don't. Who's going to buy a automobile or a pickup truck built in Russia or a pair of shoes or boots built in Russia or anything that comes from Russia?
But a lot of the exportation of petroleum, petroleum.
That's what they rely on. That and they have vodka and I don't know what else, but.
So what I'm saying though is, it can't be good for Russia in the sense that their income, obviously they're
that's it. That's all they've got as far as a major export that I'm aware of. That really, the world's largest airplane, by the way, is built in the Ukraine, not in Russia. It's always promoted as a Russian aircraft. That was it, Unitov, Ustinov, whatever it is, that really big transport plane that's built into Ukraine.
Right.
So yeah, it's not good for Russia. It's hurting them. It's hurting them severely as they got used to that income and it's gone. I think they sell natural gas to East Europe, by the way.
Which, you know, and a lot of two things that people I think are not paying enough attention to right now. The geopolitical aspects of this specific issue that we're dealing with. And also, what, you know what, John, what happened to all of the people who committed criminal acts against the president with respect to FISA abuse and such? And I don't know about you, but I've been hearing some rumblings. This week we might see one or two indictments. Not many, one or two.
Judicial Watch is still on top of that. The Department of Justice is still on top of that. It's not making news because the news cycle is eaten up with Chinese COVID-19 flu. But those things are, those matters are still moving forward. I would love to see some indictments. It'd be some nice relief from all the other stories that we're getting here. It's pretty funny to watch the local TV news coverage when it comes to the sports section. They have no sports. It must be for the sports fanatics. It must be like withdrawal. No sports. Whoever heard such a thing? I think during World War II they shut down Major League Baseball, didn't they?
I don't know.
I think they did.
Yeah, I think they did. I'm not sure.
I'm not positive. But this is getting back to the indictments. We need some indictments, and that's going on behind the scenes. There's been an occasional story with Tom Fitton giving a report on what's going on there. More revelations have leaked out here and there. They're basically covered up with the news cycle being consumed with the COVID-19 Chinese flu.
With your permission, I'm going to play a 2.5 minute clip of President Trump. This has to do with, on the periphery, the indictments, but also what he said about the FBI, with respect to the treatment of Roger Stone and General Flynn. And the reason I want to play this is because, man, he was pretty vocal. I mean, I had listened to this a couple of times to make sure, you know, that this wasn't dubbed. I'm thinking, did he really say that? And I'm glad he did. Eric, do you have that ready?
Let's hear it.
Here it is.
More about pardoning Paul Manafort or Roger Stone so they're not exposed to coronavirus in jail. Well, I just tell you this. Roger Stone was treated very unfairly. Paul Manafort, the black book, turned out to be a fraud. We learned that out during the various last number of weeks and months. They had a black book that came out of Ukraine, turned out to be a fraud. Turned out to be a fraud. They convicted a man, turned out to be a fraud. General Flynn was a highly respected person. And it turned out to be a scam on him. The FBI said he didn't lie. And Mueller's people wanted him to go to jail. Okay? So what am I going to do? You'll find out what I'm going to do. I'm not going to say what I'm going to do. But I will tell you, the whole thing turned out to be a scam. And it turned out to be a disgrace to our country. And it was a takedown of a duly elected president. And these people suffered greatly. General Flynn. I mean, what they did to him, and even the FBI said, and they had some, and nobody bigger fan of the FBI than me at the level of the people that really matter. But the top of the FBI was scum. And what they did to General Flynn, and you know it, and everybody knows it, was a disgrace. He was in the service for over 30 years. He ends up being a general and respected. Respected. And almost his first day in office, they come in with papers. They want to investigate him. Never happened before. And now the tables are turned. Investigate the investigators, I guess. These were crooked people. These are bad people. These are very dangerous people. You know what they are, though? They're scum. They're human scum.
There you go.
I did some research when Roger Stone was, we all saw the video. Roger Stone is peacefully asleep in Washington, D.C. area. And 24 heavily armed federal agents. These guys are loaded for bear. They look like they're ready to go on patrol in Afghanistan. They come to his home before dawn and do a pre-dawn raid on an unarmed man asleep in his bed because of an alleged nonviolent white collar crime.
Yep.
Alleged.
Yep.
Now, John Gotti was a real criminal, probably responsible for people being murdered. He had a life of crime his entire adult life. He was involved in a life of crime at very high levels involving tens of millions of dollars. When they arrested John Gotti, the FBI, John Gotti was not at home asleep in the morning at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. John Gotti was in a restaurant with 4 or 5 of his buddies in New York City, and the police walked in wearing coats and ties and said, "Mr. Gotti, you're under arrest. We need you to come with us." That was it.
Rough
now, how's that for a, how's that for a comparison?
Sure. Sure.
How's that for a comparison? A genuine murderer, John Gotti, involved in very high levels of organized crime for decades. Mr. Gotti, we're sorry to interrupt your dinner, sir. You need to come with us. You're under arrest.
I'm surprised they didn't let him finish dinner.
They may have.
Yeah.
In fact, they may have joined him for dinner. I don't know. But they didn't go in there looking like they were ready to go on a patrol in Afghanistan.
Right.
In the middle of the night, waking up him and his wife. No. Now, what the way they arrested John Gotti is the way law enforcement is supposed to work in this country.
Right.
That's the way it's supposed to work and the way it has traditionally worked. What they did to Roger Stone was unconscionable.
Yes.
Absolutely unconscionable. And, It did not happen.
I've talked to Roger, Roger Stone. I've exchanged communications with him, given business wise. Okay. So, I mean, not that I know him, but I certainly know him well enough to know that, man, he's no John Gotti in terms of, what he's done and what he is alleged to have done and did according to the court. So, yeah, this is horrible. And when President Trump, and the reason when he said they're scum, human scum, you know, to weaponize
a strong language, and he needed to use it because it was the right language to use.
Darn right.
Now, I met General Flynn's brother at a fundraiser for General Flynn in Dallas a couple of years ago. That was a complete setup. What was done to General Flynn was a complete setup from the get-go. They planned an operation to achieve a goal. General Flynn was completely naive that he was the target of an investigation, and President Trump used the correct and proper, very strong language to describe what the FBI leadership did to General Flynn, what they did to Roger Stone was unconscionable, and others. And there needs to be an accountability. And I hope and I pray, we've talked about this before, Doug, you and I. I doubt there'll be any indictments against Eric Holder or Mrs. Clinton or the Obama. I doubt there'll be indictments against those three.
But right.
As much as there needs to be, I doubt it. But lower level people, yes, of course. John Brennan is top of the heap in terms of culpability, in my opinion. The former head of the CIA. The former Muslim head of the CIA.
Now,
how crazy is that?
I could see him being indicted. I can see him being maybe the top level sacrificial lamb.
That's as high as it'll go.
Yeah.
If it goes that high, that's as high as it'll go.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But see, okay. So the reason I had that isolated, that clip isolated, not only because the president was pretty, vociferous.
He was emotional.
Yeah.
He was emotional about it, and he should have been.
But
he should have been. When you become the commander in chief and the chief executive, you have to be able to rely on the people that had these agencies, and he couldn't.
Exactly.
Not much happened the first 2 years of his career, of his being president, because he was cleaning house, figuring out who's a patriot, who's not, who can I trust, who can I not trust. That took up most of the first 2 years of his administration.
Yeah, he was ducking fastballs and, bullets and, metaphorically speaking. But see, so today, as we look at the environment today, you know what, John, I see the very same people. Now, look, I know this is speculation on my part. I don't have evidence, but I do believe it is the very same people who went after President Trump and who's really standing in the way of you and I and the American people, who went after him to take down his administration and failed on Spygate, failed on Russiagate, failed on Ukraine. I look at this, where we're at today. You know, very vulnerable is the economy. So maybe this could very well be a weaponization, or if not, an exploitation of an issue, that being the pandemic or plandemic, whatever you want to call it. You know, maybe this is part of that takedown. What do you think? Could it be a deep state play?
Well, easily. It's in December of 2016. We were hearing who was going to be in the Trump administration, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's gone very public again just in the last 2 to 4 weeks with what he knows. Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to be part of the Trump administration looking into and exposing the pharmaceutical industry, in particular the vaccination industry, which is a multi-billion dollar business. And what we're looking at right now are the same people that he was publicly going to be going after are behind the scenes doing what's going on right now with the coronavirus and Fauci. They're all connected. They're all connected in chain of command and by money. All of those people. And when I heard that in December 2016, the pharmaceutical industry did as well. And that's when he became public, when President Trump, I should say, became public enemy number one to the pharmaceutical industry.
Okay. Which I agree. And maybe President Trump nominated, who was that, Gottlieb, as head of, I'm sorry, which department, kind of position. But he was a big pharma guy, but President Trump approved his nomination, or nominated him, I should say. Which got me, kind of made my head kind of twist a little bit and say, why would he do that? But then maybe, I don't know. I don't know. But I can guarantee you Fauci's no friend of, or neither is Bricks no friend of President Trump. And I think President Trump now realizes that and is going after him, defunding the WHO, World Health Organization, not the band. That's
a little insider joke for those older folks. Yeah. Well, we don't know what's going on in President Trump's head or what's going on behind the scenes. We have hope and we pray that he's actually going to get rid of Fauci and Birx. That needs to happen. We need to get the country going again. As I said earlier in the show, we went from the lowest rate of unemployment ever recorded in 6 weeks, 8 weeks to the highest unemployment ever recorded. How crazy is that, Doug?
Yeah.
We need to turn this around. The country needs to get back to work. If we have COVID-19 to deal with, we quarantine the sick people. Of course we quarantine the sick people. We don't quarantine the country. That's insane. That's not working, and it will destroy our country and destroy our economy.
Well, what do you think? You know what? Let me ask you this. What do you think's going on with the
chloroquine
and the zithromycin, whatever, the Z-Pak? What's going on with that? Why such a Fauci saying no, you can't have any of that. We have to test that. You know, it could be dangerous. Yet
well,
he's pushing vaccines.
A drug has been prescribed for 60 plus years. We know what it will and will not do. That's no secret.
Right.
That's well known. That's well known. I would be looking very carefully at who's doing research on it, who's doing studies to make sure that they are, in fact, independent and not being paid off by the pharmaceutical industry to have a bad outcome. I believe there's a study in Europe involving 1,000 people, and all but maybe 2 or 3 of them recovered using the hydroxychloroquine
right.
and zinc.
Yeah.
The evidence is there that it works. I hope it keeps coming out that it will. I've already told several friends that if I got the COVID-19, that's what I would take and nothing else. If I was taking anything at all, that's what I would take.
Amen, brother. Yeah. And I actually have I communicated with my doctor the same thing because there's a portal you can use. And yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I want that, you know, not some other medication or whatever, if, you know, given the circumstances. But I was just really surprised at the,
pushback is expected. The pushback is expected.
Yeah.
Robert Kennedy Jr. scared the hell out of the pharmaceutical industry. He has veracity. When the son of the former attorney general speaks, people listen. And my belief before all this came up, I was telling people 4 or 5 months ago that in the second administration, you're going to see Robert Kennedy back in that administration. President Trump figured out real quick that the pushback against him in the first administration would be more than he could overcome. There's just too much money behind it, just money beyond belief that would be siphoned into whoever the opponent was. It wouldn't matter who it was. So my belief, I don't have any evidence, once again, is that Donald Trump was going to wait till he's reelected, then bring Robert Kennedy Jr. back into the administration and do the right thing and go after the vaccine pharmaceutical industry.
Given the field, do you think at the moment, despite the unemployment, despite the trashing of our economy, how do you feel about his reelection chances?
I think right now they're excellent. There's no announced candidate that can oppose him and beat him. Joe Biden, I mean, the man has mental issues. There's no doubt in my mind that he has cognitive issues. The governor of New York, Cuomo, is being looked at as a possible alternative. But the president's numbers, I think, are high and just getting higher. People love this guy. His daily briefings are taking the place of the rallies. And he's got a huge audience, even though it's not carried on the major networks live that I know of. Maybe it's on Fox. He's getting great numbers and a great response from people all over the country with the daily briefings.
You know, I've noticed that, and I've noticed the left, on the left, people saying, oh, I'm tuning out. I can't watch him. I can't watch him. You know, he's not statesmanlike. He's not this. He's not that. So I agree. The more they say that.
He's more human. He's more human.
Exactly.
And more real. And people love that.
Yeah.
They want that human aspect from the president. You know, I'm almost remember President Eisenhower giving speeches. Now, he was, you know, in the Oval Office. They had that massive camera pointed at him. And he obviously was not comfortable being in front of a camera.
Right.
The first president to do live statements from the Oval Office. But what's going on with President Trump is making him look very human, very approachable, emotional, showing emotion. It's unprecedented for a president to have this much airtime on television. There's Obama maybe come close, but not even close to this guy. And it's, I think it's just helping his numbers and helping his reelection.
Do you think Biden, despite his gaffes in his mental interest.
Well, he has cognitive issues on the face of it, he does.
Yeah, he does. I mean, more than I do. Okay. Yeah, I make gaffes and sometimes I slaughter words and sometimes I've got, you know.
But you're aware that you do it and he's not.
Well, that's true.
That's the difference. You're aware that you've done it and he's not.
Yeah. And I don't go around sniffing kids' hair.
Somebody that genuinely has cognitive issues, they're not aware they're doing this.
That's very true.
And that's the difference. That's the difference, Doug. If I use the wrong word, I you know, sometimes I'll say it's May 20th instead of April 20th, but I instantly correct myself because I know I screwed up. But if you have cognitive issues, you don't know you've done that.
Yeah, that's very true. Yesterday I sent out emails, and they're requiring a date and I put 2019 in there after 4 months of being really good, you know, of 2020. But anyway, and I looked at that and I thought, wow, you know, am I that far gone? But no, you're right. So, who would be his running mate? If that's what they're going to, if they're going to use him, then who's going to be his running mate? Is it going to be Hillary? Do you think? I'm telling you, something ain't right here. I just got a feeling that.
How about Michelle? Michael.
Michael.
Well, what husband is publicly going to call his wife Michael? I mean, how can that happen? I mean, seriously, how can that happen?
I've got an answer, but I can't say it.
But, I can, because that's his real name.
Well, okay. Yeah, mine was off in a little different direction, but okay. Yeah, I was supposed to be the catcher. Yeah. Okay. Oh, Eric, knocking off, man. I mean, the left is, they've got to know that they don't have a chance in hell. I mean, really, I don't think.
The big donors, they know that. They're just throwing money down a rat hole to contribute to the Democratic Party. We will get, if there is an election, and I have no reason to doubt there won't be an election. When President Trump's reelected, he will continue appointing federal judges. And that's a problem right now with Congress being out of session, that these federal judge appointments are on hold. And there's a way for the president to get around that. He can declare the Congress out of session. That's never happened, is what I'm hearing. But at some point, it has to happen. Either Congress gets called back, or he declares them out of session, so he can make the federal judge appointments. That's a big part of his plan to turn around our country and drain the swamp, is federal judge appointees.
Right.
And that's critical to everything the president is doing. And the left knows this. They know that 4 more years of President Trump, they're done for a generation, if not more, because of that. And I believe we'll have the House of Representatives taken over by Republicans once again. There's many who see no difference between the two. I see a great difference between the two.
Oh, yeah.
Not all Republicans are squeaky clean or Constitution believing, but most of them will, at least a majority, will do the right thing for the right reasons in the House and in the Senate. So I have great hope that the president will be reelected, that we'll take control of the House, and that there'll be some indictments at very high levels. The Clinton Foundation will be, and I'm sure already is, being investigated by the Department of Justice. And Fauci and Birx and the people behind this will be thoroughly investigated and brought to accountability as well. All those things need to happen, Doug.
I've got more. I don't know. I guess I've got more faith in Fauci being brought to account through investigation than anyone else. That includes all of the in my view, that the people who were behind the Spygate and FISAgate and such. That's my view. But I mean, we can do a heck of an investigation, and you know this, John. You can do a heck of an investigation and lay it down on the DA's desk, and if that DA looks at it and says, you know what, I'm not interested, then...
I've seen it happen. I've been part of those things happening.
Yeah,
I'm sure
you too. Yeah. Yeah. So then what do you do? And who do you appeal to?
There is no appeal.
Well...
Unless it's murder and you get a new DA, because there's no statutory limitations on murder.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, it's done.
Well, an argument could be made with Fauci that, that there might be some of that in there, on a large scale, but I don't know. But you know what? It all comes back to the original starting point. When is enough enough, and when are people going to say, you know what? I've had it. When's our next Lexington and Concord moment? That's kind of what I'm looking at. And,
well, these checkpoints are certainly a high probability, a very high probability. I'm sure Matt Bracken would love to talk to you about that, but one of his books, I don't recall the title, went through that scenario that I went through with you earlier. That's a very high probability. As far as being a flashpoint, that would be one of the ones I would look for.
I'm going to have him back on. I had him on a couple of years ago talking about his books, and going to have to have him back on. But in the meantime, I've got to tell you, you're doing great work. I've been, folks, I would urge you to listen to John Moore, The Liberty Man. Listen to his show and go to thelibertyman.com.
Put it in your browser. put it in your browser. Yes. Don't use a search engine. You'll be in 20 different places.
There you go.
TheLibertyMan.com in your browser.
And you know, right from there, you can get to and listen to the John Moore show. And it's, you can see it on your screen if you're watching this. And of course, you can click there to download it. And then, of course, get to the archive as well. But I would urge everyone to really listen to his show every day, Monday through Friday, live or archive. And, John, you do a great job with your guests, your regular guests, your structure, your program, and the information you provide. You really do.
Well, thank you. I started radio in 1995, part-time, 1 hour a week. And I was working for a law firm full-time as the paralegal investigator. The head of the law firm, his name was Charles Shaw, and he wrote a book about what he did in World War II, which became the film The Great Escape, starring Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen pretended to do in the film what Mr. Shaw did in real life, be captured and escape from German POW camps 5 times.
Wow.
So Mr. Shaw was a life member of the NRA. He and I would go, before I worked for him, he and I would go flying together in his Mooney aircraft. And, of course, I was at his side every criminal trial the last 7 years of his career. He died the Friday before September 11th, 2001, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So I started in radio back in 1995. He graciously gave me the time off every week to go do my radio show. And that's where I got started. And it was a local AM radio talk radio outlet, WGNU 920 on the AM dial. And it was no pre-screening. We had 5 incoming lines. And when I hit the go button on one of those lines, I had no idea who or what I would be talking to. It was great training. Great training, Doug.
A quarter of a century, folks, in radio. And boy, I could talk to you an entire show about your radio experiences. But
well, I got to know when it was a full moon. I didn't have to look at the calendar.
Boy, I'm right there with you. I completely understand.
Anybody in law enforcement and in any kind of custodial situation, nursing homes, hospitals, jails, they know when it's full moon, don't they?
Oh man, I'll tell you what. We actually back in the day, we actually marked the calendar on the nights of the full moon, and I'm telling you, John. People would not want to work that, you know, either that day before or after too. It's kind of, it was one
That's
of those
right.
things.
That's right.
So, you know,
U.S. Navy's done the most extensive studies, of the consequences of the full moon. They know more about it than anybody, the United States Navy. If you can imagine 5,000 men and women on an aircraft carrier and it's a full moon, how the consequences could be pretty dramatic. To say the least.
Yeah. I can see that. John, you did it again. We're at the end of the program. I want to thank you so very much. And again, I would urge everyone to go to, The Liberty Man. Remember, TheLibertyMan.com, TheLibertyMan.com. Put it in your browser and bookmark it. Okay. Because you got to go there every day, Monday through Friday. Check out the articles as well as listen to John every single day. On RBN, he's got just a tremendous show, a tremendous lineup of guests, new information. Again, good friend of the program, good friend of mine, and classy guy with a car that he's working on. And I still got to see.
We got new photos of the TR6 on my website.
Okay,
check them out.
We're going to check that out. For some reason I didn't scroll down to see the new photos. So, all right, I'm gonna do that. All right, my
Thank
brother.
You, Doug.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, sure. Folks, that'll
see
do
you
it.
Next week.
All right, bro. That'll do it for me. I want to say thank you so very much to the people who support us, to the people who listen to us, watch us, and tell others about us. May God bless each and every one of you, and have a great night.